Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
You make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure if I'm quite drunk enough to see me to be.
Of course, yeah. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Get it up.
One of those covers of the video store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep, what in the hell is this, and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?!
All right, you found What Am I Watching? The podcast that often asks that question when you find yourself watching cable or Hulu or Netflix in the middle of the night. Maybe you fall asleep after the first 5 minutes and suddenly wake up and you're like, what am I watching? And today's a special bonus tribute episode. It's special all around for a couple reasons. This is actually our first official Hollow Nine Fangirl Zone crossover episode. So joining us are Sean Fangirl S.
Hello.
And Interdimensional Dave.
Hello, hello.
And the movie we're talking about, What Am I Watching? Now, I will go up front and say this is not a bad movie. We are not doing a bad movie podcast. We are doing a David Bowie tribute podcast for the 1976 film, The Man Who Fell to Earth. Awesome movie. And the only thing that I would say I could be disappointed by is the fact that The Man Who Sold the World isn't on the soundtrack. I was like the whole movie waiting for, when is this going to play? Come on.
Nope. That would have fit in perfectly.
Now, he obviously, I guess, did he not do that song for a couple of years yet? Is that what the big problem with that is?
No, it would be pretty close. That should have been pretty close. He was out in L.A., and I actually thought it came out before he did the filming on this, but I can't say for sure.
We're going to be consulting the magic Google machine in the background for a lot of today's
episode.
We did
it a lot. Fire up the Google machine.
Let's see.
I do want to say really quick, Interdimensional and I were talking that I was surprised because I honestly did not know Bowie was in so many movies.
Oh, yeah. I think for a lot of us, it usually you say David Bowie, the first thing you think of is obviously Labyrinth. But for me, it's part of it. One of the movies that comes to mind right away is this movie as well, because I was alone. I was alone on an island renting this in college, and nobody wanted to watch it. They're like, why do you want to watch this weird old movie with David Bowie? And I'm like, weird old movie with David Bowie. Like, you need more of an explanation than that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I didn't know the year because I hadn't noticed that when I had watched it. But I knew it was older. I mean, just looking at the clothes, but... I was just a wee babe.
Yeah,
way back.
It was 3 years before I was born, actually. So
you weren't even a glimmer.
He hasn't fell to earth himself yet.
Yeah, that's ironic. The Man Who Sold the World was released in 1970, so it definitely could have been on. I feel like if there's one thing I can retroactively point at this movie and say, what the fuck, guys? It's that. Like, are you serious? You did not use this... Oh man,
there is reasons for that. I was reading up on the movie. That it's not entirely clear. I guess they didn't want to make it a David Bowie musical vehicle. They definitely wanted him. Although one piece of trivia is they wanted a I've got brain frozen now. Who was in Peter O'Toole? They originally wanted Peter O'Toole for this, and so it didn't encompass any David Bowie music. But when they reached out to him. Peter O'Toole probably saying to himself, good grief, I'm glad I dodged that bullet. But it wouldn't have been the same with him for sure.
Oh, absolutely not.
Oh, God, no.
You almost get the feeling a movie like this was written for David Bowie. So it's interesting to hear that he wasn't even the first choice.
So I think when they decided to do that, they just didn't include the musical aspect. They said, we're just going to go with the movie. And they went with the weird soundtrack that they had. Although there are references, and there's a part in the movie where Rip Torn's character goes running through a music shop, and you can see in the background David Bowie's Young Americans on posters for sale. Did you guys see that?
No, I didn't notice that because I was like looking in the foreground because I'm assuming that something was going to be right there.
And it's when he walks past all the, like, he's walking past almost like a big bin, and there's all those $4.99.
Yeah, could it, so $4.99 for an album? Oh my God.
You start scooping them up and throwing them in there.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was also back in the day where $4.99 was the equivalent of our $30, right? So it's like, it's all relative. Now, what's not relative, though, is that the patents that David Bowie has when he first goes to see the lawyer, $300 million in 1976 money, that's like... That's got to be like what the Powerball was just going for. You know
what, I mean? What are you from outer space?
That I love that everybody's so like, we're not gonna say it, but we kind of know something's weird about you. Like this whole movie, we're like, So Howard Hughes, how are you designing all this technology?
Hey, before we get into the movie, do you guys have any impressions or memories you want to share about David Bowie? In general, like a fan of his music, or do you barely touch on, or you just know him from movies, or?
Okay, I've known him from actually when MTV launched because I. That sounds so long ago. you know, kids, back when MTV used to have videos. That's how I was really introduced to him because my fan, and then just listening to the radio. So, I don't know too much of his older stuff, like older. So I know, like, Let's Dance and Rebel, and why am I blanking? Dancing in the Streets.
I think that's awesome. That the collab with Mick Jagger,
Dancing
in the Streets.
Yeah. It's like, that's what I remember, like, my first, like, intro, really, I think, to his music.
Yeah.
I loved all that, and then, you know, I'll listen to it when it comes on, but I've never actually owned a David Bowie album, CD, cassette, however you want to look at it.
Yeah, I will admit that I, in my younger years, actually thought David Bowie was a little too avant-garde for me. Before I was really into, you know, branching out beyond the Guns N' Roses and Metallicas of the world, you know, and but my first introduction to David Bowie was definitely Labyrinth, you know, that as a kid, seeing Labyrinth.
Love that, though.
And I also remember when he did his Glass Spider tour. And it was televised, and I watched it on Channel 11 one night, like when I was in third or second grade, something like that.
Wow.
And at that time, my uncle now is a retired lieutenant colonel in the National Guard Reserves, but at the time he was active, and he would be stationed at an armory in Teaneck a lot, which was two towns away from me. And he told us after the fact, which pissed me off, that David Bowie was rehearsing there for when they were playing at what is now the Prudential Center, Prudential Center. It's now the Brendan Byrne, or was the Brendan Byrne Arena. I forget who owns it now, but it was Continental Arena for a while. So he was rehearsing at the Teaneck Armory, and he was like, oh, yeah, David Bowie's just playing right there. And I'm like, dude,
what?
You couldn't call me? And he used to do that, though. My uncle has a history of like, oh, yeah, I was thinking about calling you because he could have rode in this prototype tank we had over at the Armory. You just to see the inside of it. And I'm like, and when was that? Oh, it was last weekend. Like, dude, don't tell me at all if it's already gone and I can't do it now. So David Bowie is listed amongst those memories of like, I probably could have met this guy. I probably could have met Bowie.
That would have been incredible.
I would have been too young to understand the significance, but it would have happened.
So I'm going to date myself a little bit here. My first David Bowie album was on 8-track.
Wow, nice.
It's okay. I'm sitting down for this. I don't need my walker to do this podcast.
Keeping it real. Keeping it real.
It was Diamond Dogs, and oh, I loved it. I fell in love with it. We didn't have MTV during our time. We used to stay up for a midnight special, and we had heard at one time that David Bowie was going to be on, so all of us got together and watched it. And he came out in his glam outfit with the red hair and the makeup, and he had these two lizard claw-like hands sticking out of his chest on his like green unitard, and we all just like, I mean, swoon, but you know, we did back then, like, oh, he's so crazy, we love it.
It was that, like, you know, unisex squeeing that we all used to do. Like, squee! But we didn't call it squee back then.
I mean, we had some great groups back then. There was Aerosmith and Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd. So we're used to something. But when we saw this guy, we're like, who is this?
He practically is from another planet.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to throw in, I happened to be talking to my mother-in-law about this, about Bowie. Because she had told me that SNL did a tribute showing some of his older stuff. She's like, and she was telling me how she remembered him coming on, and it was just because she's like your age, interdimensional Dave. There's too many Daves right now.
He's actually broadcasting from another dimension. That's how old he is, apparently. Since we're making such a big deal out of it.
Actually, I'm pretty young in the other dimension. It's this one, it hurts.
Yeah, the rough one.
She was just telling me just how it was so strange seeing him, because it was just not something that you were used to seeing like that, because he was always so out there.
Yeah.
And how she loved it, and all her girlfriends were like, oh my God, he's so cool. And like nobody, she said none of them ever thought he was really like cute and hot, but he was just so different that they all loved him.
Yeah. You couldn't stop looking.
Yeah, it's part of his appeal.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, with him, and I'm sorry.
Dan, oh no, go ahead. Say,
we also had Alice Cooper back then. Mm-hmm. You know, he was all makeup and shock. He was a little bit gothic, I suppose. And he used to scare people. In other words, your parents. I don't remember any of the older generation back then, or my parents being afraid of David Bowie. They're like, oh, that's cool. He's had such cross appeal.
I think he did.
He couldn't alienate anybody.
Yeah, it was almost like his was the only brand of weird that it's like there's like this that makes us uncomfortable that we actually have to protest against. Then, oh, well, then there's David Bowie. He's just like over there doing his thing, and that's cool. You can like him. It's all right. But everybody else, we're trying to get those records burned. Get that taken up. Take like,
whoa,
down.
Don't burn that Bowie album. What are you, nuts?
Yeah. Like, how about we just don't burn this one? Burn all the rest.
I actually rifled through a bunch of my old albums yesterday. I was just thinking at work, like, my David Live album, where is that? Because we had a yard sale and things were going. And there was one particular young lady, she liked to frame the album covers and put them up on her dorm room wall.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then she started going through my Beatles album, like, hold it.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. These are not for sale.
Yeah, I had to grab those.
I don't even have a turntable anymore, but these are not for sale.
I was thinking of getting a new one, though. Retro is cool again.
Well, if anybody listens to our Lone Gunman episode, where we had a little bit of a discussion about the continued existence of vinyl and records, and how some of our younger generation don't understand the groove system, like how the needle and the groove are working,
and the pennies that we use.
It's a great sound.
Oh, we love you, Liz. Oh, that was too funny. So this is kind of, as I was watching the movie last night, I don't know if you guys want to segue into that now, but
our listening audience a brief synopsis of what the movie's about.
Yeah, do you want to read the one that you wrote, or do you want to?
Sure. Yeah.
Go
yeah,
for
I'll
it.
Do it. It's only a paragraph, so I probably won't dry out before I finish. Thomas Jerome Newton, David Bowie, is an alien who has come to Earth in search of water to save his home planet. Aided by lawyer Oliver Farnsworth, played by Buck Henry, Thomas uses his knowledge of advanced technology to create profitable inventions. While developing a method to transport water, Thomas meets Mary Lou, played by Candy Clark, a quiet hotel clerk, and begins to fall in love with her. Just as he's ready to leave Earth, Thomas is intercepted by the U.S. government, and his entire plan is threatened.
Oh my God. It was painful to watch, actually, that moment. The, hey, where are you taking me? I was like, come on, dude. You're an alien. How did you not see this coming? Why don't you have a pocket vaporizer or something that you can, like, blast your way out of a limousine with?
Can I say there were so many moments of this movie? So many moments that I'm like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, oh, the editing, I mean, the way the actual film is put together is pretty impressive. It's from a technical standpoint, it's very ahead of 1976, as far as I'm concerned. It was like, the only way you can tell time is going by is by the way the characters physically change. And it's every character other than David Bowie, because he's the only one who's not aging. But that is really, like, they kind of put a little bit on us as the audience to be putting the pieces together with this one, which I appreciate, but I know some people can be like, that's, like, a reason to hate a movie sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I just felt like I kept missing stuff.
You know what, Sean? I had read someplace there was actually 20 minutes in addition to this movie. They cut 20 minutes from it, and in the article it said it helps a lot more with the continuity of the movie and explaining what's going on. But I remember thinking to myself, really, 20 minutes is going to explain this movie? I don't think so.
But it's almost like when they say we added 20 minutes to The Lord of the Rings, and you have to watch the whole 3 hours of it to figure out where those 20 minutes are. It's like a 30-second extra glance in this one scene. It's 2 seconds of dialogue over here. And like when you think of 20 minutes of that spread out through the movie, maybe it'll work. But this definitely had that feeling of there could be pieces missing here. There's got to be some glue that didn't make it to the paper that were kind of like lost for a second and then get pulled back in.
Yeah, for 2 hours and 20 minutes, it was lacking in exposition. For a movie that length, you just like had to go with the flow.
And I think a lot of the dialogue, I actually had a lot of respect for it, for the fact that the dialogue wasn't all just like knowledge dumping and constantly like, so let me explain to you what I've been thinking for the last 3 months. You know what I mean? It was just like, oh, let's have sex. And you're just like, why are they having sex? And they're like, isn't he having a flashback about his dying family on another planet right now? And he's fucking her with a gun full of blanks. Like, what just happened?
Yeah, that was part of it.
Well, and there was
honestly, the very opening scene is one thing that threw me.
So that was him landing.
Yeah, no, I got that. But I'm like, who the hell's that guy?
Oh, the guy watching him?
Yeah. And I'm like,
don't we see him later? Isn't he a government guy?
How would they know? How would they know? I mean, even Bowie, I'm sorry, Bowie, even Newton said people on Earth should be used to visitors because they've had visitors on his planet.
Right.
At some point.
And he said, I'm sure we would have treated you the same way if you had come over to us. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
That was hard to take when they started probing and prodding him and trying to peel off his.
They wouldn't even let him. And then he was like begging them not to. And then they basically fused the lenses to his eye.
Yeah, with X-rays. Okay.
I wear contacts, and I'm wondering those tweezers that they were using. Is that how they had to take contacts out before?
No.
Okay. His contacts were like full eyeball contacts. Yeah. Though. They weren't just the lens, you know? So it's like when he pulls it out in that one scene reveals himself to Mary Sue, you're just like, oh, shit, dude. One, he's a reptilian. God, that's crazy. No fingernails. Did he pull his nipples off, too? Like, there's a lot of stuff that...
He tried to.
He had, like, no sex organs.
Right.
And I was like, no butt.
What's...
I know we're jumping around here, but why would you start an alien investigation by starting at someone's nipples and see if you can cut it off or not?
Yeah, I didn't know what that was.
You keep giving him gin to do it?
Yeah, I know.
It was almost like on a Clockwork Orange level. Like, it was like Kubrickian medical sciences going on here.
It was weird shit.
And I had just watched Room 237, that documentary about The Shining, not too long ago. And I think that might have possibly skewed some of my perspective, but I felt very Kubrickian about this movie. I'm like, it feels like 2001. We have these long shots of then it seems like nothing until like five scenes later when you realize what that was, because now they're talking about it. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's funny you should mention that, because I think they actually tried to steer this project towards Kubrick.
Really?
But of course, he declined. Yeah. He declined. I think he made Clockwork Orange. And then, what was that? It was 68, wasn't it? Clockwork Orange? I can't remember. Now I'm going to have to Google that one, too.
Yes. Oh, my gosh, that was 68.
Fire it up.
I'm not sure.
And I always tell people, what do you mean you've never seen this? Now I understand.
Well, maybe that was 2001 that was 68.
Clockwork is 71.
Aha. So, I think I also read about this movie. They tried to use that movie, A Clockwork Orange, as inspiration for this one, at least film-wise.
Yeah, well, it definitely worked. I think the film stock and the editing style, like that's, I think, the disjointedness that you feel, Sean.
Okay.
And the whole, like, sort of, like, we're not sure we're in a new section of story until, oh, shit, we're in a new section of story. Like, oh, everybody's hair is gray now, so obviously we must be later, you know?
And like everybody's naked so often in this film.
What do you think of that?
It was very on the level of almost a softcore porn.
Yeah. There were moments 70s. When I'm like, why is this happening?
Now, watching this alone in college, I was going, damn, this movie's better than they told me it was going to be. Riptorns in there fucking every from all heaps.
Yeah, okay. He had women talking to his penis. I'm like, this isn't like my dad at all. And I'm like, what?
Yeah,
what?
Who says that?
I'm like, stop.
Apparently everybody Riptorn sleeps with says that.
Yeah, and I was just wanting to rock in the corner when that happened.
Like, the fact is, we actually saw a lot of penis in this movie as well. This thing puts Watchmen on watch. You're like, whoa, everyone was blasting that movie. There's tons of dick in this movie. Tons. Like, actually, we see a chick with her hand on one. Like, it was a full-on porn shot. I was like, she's talking to the head of his penis. She is talking into the microphone. This is crazy.
Can you hear me?
This isn't like my dad's at all. Why do you know what your dad's looks like this? That's crazy. Oh.
Yeah, that's what
I didn't remember any of that. When I started watching, I'm like, what? What?
Yeah, me too. I was like, oh, God.
And even then, in the end, you get a David Bowie glimpse of like, man, I don't remember that.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, every time he was naked, you've never really seen anything. So, and then at the very end, I'm like, oh, okay, then.
So is part of his masquerade that he has, like, fake genitals that he installs or puts on? Like, when he puts on his eyes and he puts on his fingernails, he's got... And it's like, it's got to be functional because he spends a significant amount of time with Mary Lou. like she wouldn't have stuck around if the goods weren't being delivered. You know what I mean?
It's
Yeah, and I think almost every guy we see, Rip Torn's, we see Ben Casey's or Bernie Casey's, then we see the UN Jeffries, the Tri-Lam National Chapter Leader, is the head of the government conspiracy arm of this film, and as they're later in the film murdering Mr. Thomas's lawyer and his male lover partner.
Yeah, Farnsworth and his partner.
So much ahead of its time stuff in this movie.
I was going to ask, is that like really one of the early ones? Yeah, I was going to say, is this one of the early films that actually like pointed out,
but did it in a graceful way
without pointing it out?
Yeah. Like, did it, like, it was almost like they didn't even mention it. It's just in the fact that he walks through a room and they give each other a glance, or later he's playing solitaire on the bed, but they're both wearing tuxes.
Yeah. Well that's part of its charm.
He does say something like, I love him, like, I love you. Or,
no, see,
you know.
Like, that's what a movie today would do, to be like, hey, look how edgy we're being. We have a gay couple in the 70s, you know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly.
He'd be like, oh.
Yeah, didn't have to broadcast and say, okay, everybody, this is where we introduce our two gay characters. You just understood it was so organic and natural to the movie. You're like, oh, cool.
And I like
it's
how.
It's not in your face.
It didn't even dawn on me until the scene when they're both wearing tuxes and then one of them is playing solitaire on the bed. I'm like, all right, that's not a business meeting. This isn't like, we're going to talk about wiping this guy out and I'll get out of here when my mod's coming over. This was like, hey, so we're either just getting back from the theater or just about to go out to the theater. But either way, we both just got ready in the same bedroom.
I wonder what Buck Henry thought of that or doing that too. Obviously, I don't think it would bother him at all. But I know him for his comedy. I mean, he used to write for Get Smart and a whole bunch of TV shows like that. And says, now we're going to put you in this movie and you're going to have this scene. And I'd be dying to know what his reaction was, but apparently it didn't bother him at all.
Maybe because of the way it was being handled, you know, because it was so like, we're going to make this as just a part of life. Like, who cares? It's part of your character. It's not like we're suddenly making part of the agenda of the film to be promoting marriage equality.
They even had interracial couple, which.
Yeah, well, that was
the
Bernie Casey.
That seemed to be something that you wouldn't have normally seen either at that time.
Yeah, Bernie Casey, you look like you'd be a linebacker for the Chicago Bears, going through that pool and then lifting his girlfriend, wife,
yeah,
out of the pool. Like, naked.
Oh, that's right, because naked, don't they have kids?
Yeah,
there are three kids. Yeah, wow. Dude, again, this movie's so... And I think this movie flew under the radar. Definitely there's like an entire generation that doesn't know about it now. And I'm sure they'll find it now that David Bowie passed away. May he rest in peace. But I don't know that they are going to be equipped enough to understand it. You know, the way we are from when seeing it closer to when it came out or seeing it in a time before the iPhone generation. So... seeing the ideas that some of these inventions that are happening, I felt very much at one point that this was like an indictment of Apple, but like 20 years early, because
I'm like, is this a Steve Jobs movie, really?
The whole thing at the end when that Professor Canuti's on the news saying, you know, the consumer market can only absorb so much innovation at once and can only handle so many products. And I'm going, all right, where are these people now? Because we get an iPhone every 6 months. That's exactly an indictment of what Apple does, you know, and trying to say we gotta control this, man. We can't just keep, like, how our budget's going to, our entire economy's going to collapse. And
That hurt. Yeah. You know, I know that was way his attacking Thomas Jerome Newton and making sure he stopped making his hundreds of millions of dollars, and to indict a character or an inventor, his role.
Yeah.
To say, well, we can't handle this. Society can't handle this. All these inventions, this has got to stop. What are you, nuts?
I know. I got to say, though, there have been times in like the last 10 years where I've been like, can't we put a moratorium on iPhones for a year? And I know Apple's probably like, yo, dude, you're doing a podcast that's released on iTunes. You want to chill? And I'm just saying... there's nothing
wrong.
We're
going to be edited.
Nothing wrong with innovation, but in all reality, this guy had a point that I think is pretty, like, you know, our society can't afford its mortgages, but they're camping out in line for 3 days to spend $600 on a phone when the one they still have is still working and perfectly fine.
Virtually the same thing.
Yeah, this one does panoramic shooting that you don't have to hold. It vibrates itself and rotates on its own. Oh, great. Let me spend $600 on that. You know what I mean? Something I'll use once to show people I have the ability to do it and then never use again.
I was listening to the Slate podcast, their culture podcast, and I was going to ask Sean, but I'm going to pick on Sean about this. And this, the sex scenes. First of all, I didn't know Candy Clark, who plays Mary Lou, was also played the alien wife to Dave Bowie's character.
Now that explains so many of those shots. Oh my God! Okay, that's awesome.
And just reading, I'm like, that's the same actress. Whoa!
That's why he was into her then. Okay, that makes so much more sense.
The weird, like,
I call it the milkshake.
Wax. Yeah, okay. I was
milkshake sex, because it was like milkshakes flying everywhere. What'd you think of that?
Oh.
I was thinking it was... Okay, this is weird.
Yeah.
Because like I said, this was the very first time I've seen it.
What?
Yes.
Oh, see, I think we should do this for all What Am I Watchings going forward. Like, have like two or three people who've seen it a couple times and are rewatching it just to refresh, and then at least one person who never saw it before, so they could be like, why the hell do you guys watch this more than once? like seriously, you watched this more than once? Okay, all right.
It was strange. So I was thinking that shot because, you know, in the now, and I honestly... after watching this, I was thinking he wasn't from a different planet. It was the same planet, different time.
Oh, he was a time traveler?
Yes. Mm. And that it was their way of trying to almost, and this is going to sound weird, I guess. I was thinking it was like wax, and they were like forming like what he should look like. And the only way it could happen is if she believed.
Interesting interpretation, Sean.
Holy shit. I am like, how do you watch movies? This is crazy. I mean, it's awesome. I'm happy for you, but this is crazy.
That it was, they were having this moment because he says to Mary Lou, it'll only happen if you really believe or really feel it. So, and then you had these weird flashbacks. So I was thinking that it was him and his wife in the future time, and knowing that he has to come back to the past. And so he has to look like what we look like. And so that's why it was only from their love. And she was like forming everything on him And that's why she kept rubbing him down everywhere. That's okay. What I got from that.
So for the kids out there, that's not what happened. But I just think that that's insane and cool that you added that sort of level of backdrop to it. I was just like, wow, look at this species. They secrete from every pore of their friggin' skin. And both of them. It's like, yeah, we're both just rubbing around in each other's stuff.
Yeah. For those of you listening who haven't seen the movie, David Bowie's character, Thomas Jerome Newton, does have a flashback because he and his Earthbound girlfriend, Mary Lou, are going to attempt sex. And I guess they've had sex with Newton's attachments. Sorry. Yeah. But he wanted to try it his way, and he had a flashback, and it's this whirling, twisting, pastiche of him and like his
zero-G.
Zero-G, yeah. And there's all this frothing. Oh, milkshake, God. Like quality.
Frothing.
And that's how he did it. And so he tries that.
You could also use the word lather if you'd like. They lathered up.
Lathering, frothing, spinning and bubbling. God. And she, when they return to the present time, she puts his hand on him, and he starts to, froth.
And she, her credit, she's been freaking out for an hour at this point.
She peed on herself.
She's like, she's traumatized to never be the same again. I've been sleeping with an alien for over a year.
She was, after she, peed on herself, then all of a sudden she's like, okay, let me get undressed and try this. And I'm like, what?
Well, no, you know what? She's got to say to herself, I guess I've already done this. You know what I mean? Now that I know what's happening, let's see if just knowing changes anything. Oh my God.
Still freaked her out.
It's mean as hell. I mean, we understand why, but like, think about the implications. This is like, imagine if like one of your significant other just came out of the bathroom and you're like, what? What the fuck? You're not a human being. Are you shitting me? Are you shitting me? You're not a human being?
Your eyes. like
take that and then you go Ace Ventura for like a month. You're like, no. Like burning your clothes and chewing 20 sticks of gum at once. You're just like, what the hell? But he's the hero of the movie, so we hope that they don't react that way. But she does. She throws her drink over her shoulder. Like,
I had to tell someone at work the next day, yeah, I watched The Man Who Fell to Earth, and there was one scene where their girlfriend, Mary Lou, saw our boy, Tom Strone Newton, and she peed herself. Mm. And my friend goes, well, they didn't show that. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, it was a close-up of the urine coming down her leg.
Coming out the side. Of like, wait a minute. Does she have a penis all of a sudden?
So she's the only one who can aim where she's peeing while standing up.
She was that frightened.
She grew one. She grew one.
People are listening to the podcast now. Like, what?
What the hell movie is this? Caligula, starring David Bowie.
We haven't even gotten to the part where they have sex with a pistol yet.
Oh, yeah, that's weird shit. God.
But watching this, seriously, I'm like, how did this even... Like, I told you guys it was playing on one of the pay stations. And I'm like, how did they even play this? The only station that I, with all of the nudity that I felt would get away with this would be like Cinemax. Because that's kind of like their thing. And I mean, there was like from underneath full on like lady genital
parts. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm like trying to be nice. And it was in the 70s. So,
just don't call it a hoo ha. For God's sake, use the words. For God's sake, people, grow up. If I hear a person in real life call my hey nanny nanny was showing, I swear to God, get the fuck out of my face. That's ridiculous. Grow up.
It was 70s. So, I mean, I was surprised that there was as much trimming that had happened, though.
There was also a severe lack of trimming as well. So it was a mixed bag. It was every flavor. There's a little something for everybody in this movie.
It was more than I thought, but less than you probably thought that there should be. How about that?
A very natural movie. It's very avant-garde, even for its day.
Yeah, avant-garde is definitely... I mean, it felt David Lynch at times as well. Like, I almost felt like there's like, this is a forerunner of Dune. This is kind of like a...
Yeah, I wonder what David Lynch would have done with this property. Wow.
Yeah, I imagine it would have been like kind of different, but kind of cool. I don't know. I love Dune. I'm a big, like, David Lynch fan, so I always am like, I'd give David Lynch a pass on everything. Like, hey, try this one out, man. Let's see what this is. What did you guys think of the Mary Lou character? She's, like, a really interesting, because her diction makes her sound, like, podunk dumb a lot of the time, but then she'll say something, and you're like, where did that come from? Like,
She was supposed to be a very simple person, and I think the synopsis, did I read that? A quiet hotel clerk.
Right.
Yeah, she was quiet, and I was stunned to read her IMDb page. She was in, what was she in? I'm going to click on it right now so everyone, like, twiddle their thumbs while I do that. Oh, American Graffiti. That's right. She was in American Graffiti. I'm like, what? That's her?
She's also been on some episodes of Criminal Minds in the last couple years.
She has a huge resume. Unbelievable.
Zodiac. She's in the Zodiac film.
Yeah. Yes. Debbie and American Graffiti, both of them. I was stunned to see that was the same person. That's amazing.
She was in an episode of Baywatch Nights.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
As Mary
Lou. Oh, Radioland Murders. Do you know, have you guys ever seen that movie, Radioland Murders?
No. Nope.
It was a George Lucas, Steven Spielberg collaboration. George Lucas actually wrote it. And it's all about, like, a radio station launching on their first night on the new network. Like, you're actually trying to launch a new network, and it's all old-timey radio shows being performed live. Apparently that was a thing. People used to go see, like, the Shadow being broadcast, and they would actually be, like, people in tuxes reading it in front of microphones, but kind of semi-acting. It's one of the movies that made me want to podcast, actually. It's what kind of gave me the passion to want to do this. So, nice connection here that she plays one of the characters in that movie's, like, mother who comes to see him at work on premiere night. So I was like, that's cool. I love that little familiarity. But I love the way she spoke in this movie. Like she'll be telling a story, or, like, when she's in the tub, she's like, so you're married, huh?
Yeah.
I guess that's, you miss, funny, your wife, huh? Oh, well.
But you dig me, right?
I guess I'll do for now, okay? And then, like, she'd be like, you know, sometimes I think people are trying to do this and that, but I just really don't think anybody knows what's going on. And you're like, oh, look at you. Look at you, philosopher. Like, what's going on over here?
And apparently pretty strong.
Oh, my God. Just carries him like Superwoman right from that elevator.
I'm just thinking, really? You're going to drag this dude? He passes out. He's bleeding from his nose, and you're just dragging his ass out of the elevator. And then you're like, all right, hold on. Let me lift up your legs. I'll just carry you down to your room and put you in the bed. You're totally fine.
Right,
I thought you were dead.
Hold
really?
On,
so
mister,
you're just carrying
we're
a dead
almost
person?
There, mister. You're going to be just fine. You're all right. Hold on.
Well, I thought she actually did that. I said, is David Bowie that frail where she could pick him up and carry him? But they actually did a trick. Did you guys know the trick?
He had to be on some kind of a forklift or something.
He
right?
was on a bicycle seat combination with a skateboard.
Okay.
Is that why she had the weird, like, walk down the hall?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, bicycle seat and skateboard? They couldn't come up with something else? Okay, whatever. It worked because I thought she was carrying them to the rooms.
Yeah. You know what? Like, having to creatively problem solve practical effects back in the day. Mm. Led to some of the coolest filmmaking just because. You know what I mean? It was like some of these angles and some of these shots that we remember most from movies that are the shots where you're suddenly thinking, yeah, this movie's awesome because who the hell would have thought to put the camera there? Sometimes those moments are the moments that the filmmakers are like, I can't fucking believe this is the only spot we can put this camera. All right, well, let's just hope this works. And then they leave that shot in the movie because it's the only shot they had for that scene. And everybody's like, this is brilliant. This guy's a genius. Look what he thought to do. And sometimes it's like, no, literally, dude, the camera wouldn't fit anywhere else in that room except for there. But I'll take that credit. I'll say, yeah, sure, we were geniuses. That's what happened.
Yeah, you know? Sometimes it's just the guts to try.
Yeah.
Really? And then you're labeled an innovator and like, yeah, I'll take that too.
I mean, it's almost like where you have to respect CG and things, like you have to respect like what Star Wars did to filmmaking, but then when it becomes the crutch of laziness where they didn't even try to come up with a practical way to solve the problem, that's, I think, when it becomes like a tired thing. And I feel like this movie, nothing felt like tired. If anything, this is the movie, one of the movies in the grand lexicon of Hollywood that was probably inventing a lot of these, you know, practical solutions to problems that then everybody stole and made their own afterwards. And the soapbox.
Can I interject
away.
With a little? Sorry, we got on a top kid. So a little bit of the science fiction aspect of it. And his spaceship / home / train. There's one point in the movie where they're looking out the window, I think, and you see some trains going by the. I think it's the motel room. He said, trains are so interesting on your planet, or whatever he said.
Oh, it's when what's her name does the whole train soliloquy.
Yeah. And then you get a look at, I call it, I think I told you guys, the wedge of cheese.
Yeah, the cheese wedge.
It looks like a wedge of cheese or something. It also seems to double as a home, and it goes along a rail. People who haven't watched the movie, people who have watched the movie know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If you haven't, that's how he transports himself. To be on Earth, and if you guys noticed, there was a scene in the movie where he's in the limo, and he's moving along in the limo, and in the background, you can see these people. They look like pioneers and explorers.
Mm-hmm. This was awesome. I loved this part.
So, I'll say what I think it was all about. I don't know, you can astral project using this or mentally project yourself, but somehow through this dive or in concert with the way you're thinking or something, you can project yourself or move to another planet as a visitor, and people can see you. Of course, you're actually there. You're not spiritually there. But what was your impression of space travel in this, Dave?
Well, hold on a second. There's actually someone knocking on my door. Hold on.
From another planet, I hope.
And he kind of snaps out of it, and they're back into his normal plane of existence.
He couldn't go faster than 30 miles per hour in his limo, and he had a real problem with elevators, too.
Right.
I wonder if speed and motion had something to do with, interplanetary travel, and that's how they did it. Because when they did the scene carrying him to the – they went up to the elevators too fast, and he collapsed, and his nose started to bleed. So I can only believe that that had something to do with it, and you're probably onto something, Sean. Now, Dave, you can tell us your impression of interstellar or interdimensional travel, train and the limo, too. What'd you think?
Yeah, all right. So and I totally missed what you guys said, and Sean, I know I actually had stopped recording when I stepped away, so I'm going to need your file now, definitely.
Yeah.
What's it called? I definitely thought he was astral projecting in time on Earth, like when they were able to do the limousine, because he somehow projected the entire vehicle, you know what I mean? Because they saw it, you know, they were all pointing like, what the hell is that? And then it disappeared. And the fact that the shots we saw in the beginning, I think at first we were meant to think that it was our rocket ship launching, you know, like the shots that looked a little bit like the Apollo 11 launch footage, the famous shots of like one of the blasters, like, breaking away once it was in orbit. But maybe I think what we were actually seeing was him launching from his planet. And I think I think it was like he literally fell to Earth. Like, I think he landed in water, you know. And I think that's confirmed by them overlaying the scene later with Bernie Casey diving into the pool. Like, they do a lot of these sort of, like, overlay montage crossfades in this movie that I think are supposed to be explanations, like subconscious explanations of how things wound up working out. And so I got the impression that he actually did make a journey through space in some kind of a craft, and that when he's coming down that mountain in the beginning, that's actually, like, the blast crater from where he crashed. But then the question becomes, why couldn't he just fly back in whatever that was? You know what I mean? So it had to be some kind of a temporary thing. And I feel like the idea of him just falling through the atmosphere in just a suit or something is a little crazy. But, you know, who knows? And maybe that's the part that doesn't matter as much. But the fact is, he was able to beam, like, in real time, something he was watching on TV to that magical clear piece of paper that his wife was looking at on their home planet. So,
can I stop you for 1 second?
Sure.
Look at the new thing that's coming out, too. I swear they're taking it from past movies. That TV that you can roll up.
It's totally
what she had.
Yeah, yeah. They've been talking about like an electronic page for a long time, like a paper thin kind of LCD screen type of technology.
Go ahead.
No. That's so there's definitely an ability to send radio, and I think the idea that they could see X-ray means that they could probably think in different waveforms and like actually broadcast their thoughts. But that doesn't cover him being able to physically, because I feel like if he was able to do that and he was able to astral project himself, he could just go back to his planet at any time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, unless if that could actually be, who knows? What if that's all those little moments that they keep coming back to where the four of them are all hugging and like happy on that other planet? What if he is astral projecting back every once in a while just for like 5 minutes just to say, hey guys, I'm still trying. I know you're literally gasping for water up here. My place is drying out, like it's becoming Death Valley, and this is pretty much a futile effort, but I'm trying. I almost
It was hard to take what's literal and what's not,
right?
As a viewer, but he did know they died, right?
Well, I was going to say
what I was wondering.
They're dead, right? Like we totally have to just know that they died, right?
Yeah.
They show us a shot of them all dead on the ground, so we have to take that at face value, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have his wife holding the one kid and the other one reaching.
Oh, they were like crawling to get back into the thing.
I was like, what the heck? Is this happening? Is this what he knows will happen?
Yeah, I was kind of bouncing back and forth between, is this what he's imagining in his mind since they've been holding him prisoner? He's just like, oh, God, they're dead. Oh, God. You know, is this him losing faith? Or is it actually what happened? Or I just think on a lot of levels, they didn't really discuss the physics of time travel. Like, he clearly doesn't age the way the people around him on Earth are aging, but does that mean that he doesn't age at all and that he's able to make the trip between wherever his planet is and ours in a time? Like, our whole thing is that none of us would ever survive a journey to another planet because of the way time works. Like, we would either age too quickly, and by the time we get to the other planet, so many years will have gone by for us that we'll become too weak or whatever. He obviously had the technology to get here, but the fact that he was here for so long, like, I feel like it's almost like this thing was doomed from the get-go. Like, there was no way this was ever going to work.
I thought they said it was like a 3-year time period, though. I thought I read that.
It was three in the description on iTunes. It says over 3 years from when he meets the lawyer, he amasses enough wealth and technology to build a ship capable of bringing water back to his planet.
Okay, and then everybody, around him is aging. But yeah, that's what I don't know what I was thinking because everybody got old. Can I just say, I'm sorry. This is horrible. This is horrible that I'm actually thinking this and it's going to come out of my mouth.
Say it.
For Mary Lou being old like she was, which, okay, the old makeup, it is what it is at the time. She had great boobs for being old.
Oh, no, she was hot. Like when she goes to see him in the hotel prison and like they are having like sex and he's remembering the old times that they were having sex. I was just like,
they're having pistol sex now.
Yeah. She's got a full on Mrs. Robinson thing going on here. She's pretty much kept her figure going.
Yeah.
Yeah. She must've told the makeup guy, yeah, you can wrinkle my face, but hold on.
Do not touch my boobs.
Touch my boobs.
My boobs are my fortune.
Movies last forever. Don't touch me.
So I guess, just because I've got it on in the background now, and I'm at the part where they're in the limo and they see the train go by, and she's telling him the story about when she was like 10, her mom put her on a train to go visit her grandma, and it was like great because there were concessions and there were entertainment, and the seats were all new and fancy, and everything was great. And then she rode the train again 10 years later, and the seats were all shabby, and there were no more concession stands. And it's like, I guess was supposed to be reminding him that, like, even if you make it back to your planet, by the time you get there, like, this whole thing is taking too long. And it's early in the movie, so you don't really 100% get the significance of that story at that point, you know? And I think maybe that was why they were aging everybody around him in the movie, for us to be getting a hint of, like, look, if this is what these people are looking like, even though he's not aging, you know that that's how much time is going by.
Especially when he says 15 months is too long at one point.
Yeah, right? Like, he's like, these people are literally dying right this second on my planet. Like, to me, I'm just like, dude, they died the day you left. You know what I mean? Like, the day you left, they were like, and scene. We're done.
That's too bad. That's part of the sadness of the movie, too. He had to try. But there's a lot of bittersweet in this movie. There's a lot of heroism and courage, but there's some sadness too that can really get to you, especially by the end of the movie.
Well, it makes it always in stories like this makes us Earthlings really have this primitive side to us. That it's amazing how we have this sophistication to have technology to be able to build this guy's machine. We have the high life of the one percenters that we see a little bit too, but then when it comes to up, we know you're an alien. All right, time to be complete brutes and go fascist on you. We're gonna totally give you the Dr. Mengele treatment in your hotel prison. And we're going to not let you leave. I mean, like, a guy with that much power and money, on launch day they stop you? Like, really? It's
And well, he was betrayed by his his chauffeur, too.
And he was betrayed by Rip Torn's character.
Oh, my God. And that was, I think, part of the heartbreak, too, because I felt like we were supposed to like Rip Torn for the first half of the movie.
I did like him.
I still liked him even in the end, too, but I was just like, you son of a bitch, man. That's so... And she even says, and now I don't know, was he... You know, when we see Rip Torn and Mary Lou are out at lunch while Thomas is in prison... And he's watching TV, and the things that are being said on the TV, she is kind of saying to Rip Torn in the conversation. Was he beaming those thoughts to her, do you think? Like, because we've already seen him beam TV signals to his wife, and it was kind of like the people on the TV were like, we didn't help that guy, we let him die. And she's like, we didn't help Tommy very much, did we? You know, and it became this thing where maybe that's how he actually wound up getting out in the end anyway, but... Still too little too late. They really betrayed him.
And oddly enough, he was forgiving to the Nathan Bryce character, which was played by Rip Torn. Even in the end, when he sought him out, when Bryce sought him out, Thomas Jerome Newton, or I'll just call him Newton, was forgiving. Or Tommy. I can call him Tommy.
I want one Tommy.
Point, you know, at one point in the movie, she said to him, Tommy, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. It was awesome. Yeah. I love those little tongue-in-cheek moments.
Yeah.
And all the guys back in the day giving each other nods, like, oh, yeah, I love The Who. I just want to let you know I love The Who. We have to put this in there. But, yeah, now, and I think there was a certain thing where it's like he had respect for Bryce's scientific knowledge. So that's probably why he was like, oh, whatever. We would have done the same thing to you, I guess. Like, his ultimate defeat at the end. And I guess we're to take it that he's living in some other country somewhere, right? That... he found refuge somewhere else because, like, you know, Bryce had to find him. He had to follow the clues on the album.
I just assumed he was hiding out somewhere in the U.S. I mean, it's not like necessarily.
That's what I thought, too.
I mean, I guess the government's like, oh, well, who are we going to believe? We have an alien that we had locked up in a hotel that we had paying for him being locked up in the hotel.
Yeah, right? Like, he was... what a bunch of bastards. Like, you're paying for your own incarceration like that.
And I just want to say that the doctors really pissed me off with the whole contact thing. You can't see X-ray. You know that he's a fucking alien.
Yeah, right? Like, it's just the,
you don't know what he can do.
And then they all had that creepy smile on their faces right after
I thought they were all frozen. Like, he did something.
That would have been awesome if that was the case, but I feel like he would have done that before they took the picture. I almost got the feeling that they were literally there to do that. Like, almost like, we're going to fuck up his eyes today. You know, like, we go in with the intention. We think X-ray affects him weird. Let's do this. Let's just do this.
Give him more gin. You're fine.
He had revealed to Bryce earlier, because Bryce was spying on him, and he put an X-ray camera in the room, and he was taking pictures, and Newton said to him, I know you're taking pictures of me. I can see X-rays.
And you saw that he saw it when it happened, and he kind of, like, flinched, but then was like, he played it off like nothing happened, and Bryce was trying to do that thing with the remote wouldn't work. That was, I loved that little sequence. Oh, yeah, this doesn't work. Hold on, I'm going to get some more ice. Let me just put this in my pocket. Yeah. Throw this in the ice cubes, and here's the remote. It suddenly works again. If you could dodge a wrench, you could dodge a ball.
You notice there was a lot of clinking. I mean, I know they're drinking and they're always plying them with alcohol, but there was a lot of clinking of ice cubes.
Yeah.
I suppose that was supposed to make us feel as viewers like, man, he's come from a planet. There's no water. And here we are just using it to flavor our drinks and cool things.
I didn't even think about that. That's crazy.
It's torture. It was torture for him. And I was thinking like, oh, here's more clinking ice cubes, poor bastard. People are dying of thirst on this whole planet.
Hold on, let me get more ice.
Yeah, indulge yourself with another drink.
Here, drink this. It looks like water, but it's gin.
Well, see, I thought when Rip Torn had dropped an ice cube to him, he just kicks it.
Yeah, what are you, insane? That's water.
Right. And it was
Rip Torn, I do what I want.
I felt like that was...
My name is a verb and the past tense of what happens when you do that verb. I'm the most awesomely named person on Earth.
I'm going to be in Men in Black.
And Dodgeball.
I know. Treat me and my nude scene seriously.
Oh, God.
Go ahead, Sean. I'm sorry.
I'm never going to, like...
Podcast with us again.
No, I'm never going to get talking to a penis. Like, this isn't like my dad's at all. What?
And you're not looking like my mom either, sweetheart. Yeah. Let's get this on. Let's get this going.
I just can't get that out of my head.
You're not supposed to talk to it, sweetheart. Let's go.
I need therapy now.
Unless it's hello.
Hello. God.
Do you think a movie like this would resonate with today's audiences? I mean, with the environmental message or existential crises or use of drugs or alcohol? Do you think today's audience, let's say Sean's 24-year-old friend, can they watch The Man Who Fell to Earth and, like, get it? Will it ring true for them?
You know what? Clone was already making fun of me. Okay, I was picturing things in the movie.
It's an appreciation, Sean. Yeah, okay. It's affection.
How the hell does your brain work? Yeah, it's appreciation. Okay,
fascination, for God's sake.
So, like, my friends, my age and younger, who would watch this, I think they'd just be like, "What the fuck is this?" And that's why, like, the same ones that I'm like, "Oh my God, you have to watch Blade Runner. You have to watch Clockwork Orange." And I kind of get the same reaction with those movies, so I don't think people would really get it.
Oh, no. We're doomed then as a race of people.
It's rough, man. It's a rough time right now to realize that we're we are at the changing of the guard from those who think to those who want to be thought for. And I get the feeling, I agree with Sean. I think watching this version of the movie probably would not resonate, but I almost was thinking, like, my weird way of watching movies, there you go, was the whole time thinking, how could they remake this? Who could they cast in all these parts? And they totally should remake a movie like this. Like, of all the things that are being remade and ruined, let's try to remake something like this and have, like, I don't know, Cronenberg do it or something. You know what I mean? Like, someone who would have a level of respect for what they were trying to do with the original and try to find a way to kind of capture some of that spirit. But I also don't think that we have the acting chops out there for people in the age ranges of people who were in this original to recreate it. Like, you know, like, they would put Scarlett Johansson as Mary Lou. You know what I mean? And it's like, as much as I loved Lucy, she can't pull this off, you know?
Yeah.
I love, like, Black Widow, but no, not here.
Yeah. So what do you think of David Bowie's acting then? First of all, he charmed me sometimes when he had that little smile. You didn't get to see the smile too. He had this little smile, and his teeth early on were a little weird too. David Bowie, sorry, David. But he was so charming. He was so sweet. And that was part of his character too. He wasn't there to invade, you know, and take over. He just wanted water for his planet.
Right.
That's like the real, no wonder they picked him for the role eventually. He's charming and sweet and real like too. He knew he was a star and he knew his effect on people. And in the movie, he's an alien and he's larger than life, but he's just as sweet and nice to everybody out there. What do you guys think?
Well, I like the fact that he does say, you know, I can't hate anybody.
Mm.
It reminds me of another movie we just did.
Yeah.
When it's like, I have no memory.
I also
But I did like how they had him. He was always very level. He was never, you know, the emotions weren't going one way or another, like, crazy, except when he finally hits, like, the cookie sheet.
Yeah. And that was, like, you push anybody too far, they're going to snap at some point.
Right. And I'm thinking, that's a hot cookie sheet.
And I'm thinking his whole family is just dying, like, drying out as corpses on his planet right now.
Yuck.
With his broke down cheese wedge.
Yeah. I thought it was like an interesting actual exemplification of a theory I'd heard a long time ago, that any species that was able to reach the level of intelligence needed to design the technology to, you know, traverse the universe, moved past things like aggression and imperialism a long, long time ago. And and for that reason, like, as a kid, I was actually always afraid of aliens, like, as a concept. I was afraid of us being invaded. I was afraid of an idea of people that had better machines than us and that we would instantly just die. And then when I think my father, like, mentioned that theory to me a long time ago, and then I'd seen it in subsequent research about UFOs and stuff. And I kind of had to latch on to that philosophy to be okay with the idea of aliens. And I feel like it was amazing that a movie like this went that route, because I think there would be a tendency, you could portray Tommy as a tyrant, corporate, you know, baron type who was hell-bent on raising that money to bring an army from his planet to this planet, you know? But it was the idea that, you know, I'm going to use the technology to amass wealth, but it's also kind of creating cool stuff. Like, who doesn't want this stereo that just uses big steel balls to play the music and it lights up and you put a little dome over it, put it in on the middle of a table. It's a conversation starter for your home. You know, it's like, oh, we have Polaroid before it was Polaroid, you know? Mm-hmm. He was kind of giving us things that are going to be fun for us to have anyway.
You're talking about the Fermi equation on the Fermi paradox. It's a conflict between arguments, I'm reading it, of scale and probability that seem to favor intelligent life being common in the universe and a total lack of evidence of intelligent life having ever risen anywhere other than Earth. Now, that's a paradox.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to call us the intelligent life, yo, then the whole universe is in trouble. Not all of us are as cool and level-headed as podcasters are.
We're turning into Idiocracy.
Yeah, the only movie that started out as a comedy and became a documentary.
Jeez, it hurts.
But then again, so did this movie. I mean, are we to maybe think that possibly aliens did fall to Earth, and that's how we got some of the cool technology that we got, and that they are masquerading as some of these really innovative inventor types and people who started major companies? Like,
if that's true, let's just hope they're just like David Bowie and sweet and charming, who want to not alienate people, but, you know, reach out their hand and make us part of the larger community. That's my hope.
And at the same time, you know, save their planet from imminent destruction. Yeah. Save their wife and kids.
What was that? Oh, did you guys see the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still, the original?
Yes. The black and white one where it lands right on the White House lawn.
Yep. Save ourselves from ourselves. He just has to put up. He's like a space policeman.
Yeah.
He says, you guys have to stop right here because you're about to go over the brink, and we can't have that in the rest of the galaxy. So shape up or I'll be back, and you don't want me to come back.
I'm supposed to give a report, and right now you guys are getting a giant F. And you know what happens? We send those guys from Hitchhiker's Guide to, you know, demolish. You know, we just got to move you out of the way. We're building a highway. It's got to keep going. So I feel like I would recommend this movie to other people, but I would do it fully knowing that there's probably a 10% chance they'll be on board. You know what I mean? That I'm hoping you'll get out of it what I got out of it, but you might be cursing me halfway through.
Yeah, you just have to be a little patient and take it all in. There is a lack of exposition in there, but if you're a fan of David Bowie and you want to see something out there, then watch it. It's kind of cool.
It feels like one of those movies that actually, watching the movie, I felt like I had a similar experience to what it probably would have been like to reading the book. You know, I had to do a fair amount of thinking myself and try to figure out what are the bigger messages being sent in some of these sequences. Like, I feel like he was identifying the idea of the indictment of mass media being mind control, because there's that one scene where he's looking at the bank of TVs and going, get out of my mind, get out of my mind.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, so he's able to see all the bullshit behind the scenes, you know, he's
Fox
able
News.
To see through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of things like that I feel like are almost the kind of lessons that classic authors were hiding in their books. So I feel like it's definitely a thinking person's movie, and I don't mean to say that there aren't enough people who think, but there aren't enough people who think, so you got to be careful who you recommend it to. But
would you share this with your younger friends, Sean?
Yeah, I would. I don't know how many of them would not sit through it, but like get out of it, even kind of the same thinking as I had. you know, I think a lot of them would probably look at this and look at me and be like, what is this? That they would be like, what am I watching?
What am I watching?
Yeah. So, and is it watching me back?
Get out of my mind! Get out of my mind! Yeah. Stop
you
telling
just really
me
have to get through it and then sit back, like Dave was saying, and think about it and be like, what are you getting from it? Because it isn't just an entertainment kind of movie. And unfortunately, too many people nowadays aren't able to do that.
Mm-hmm. They don't want to think at all.
No. They're like, just, you know, I feel like, you know, we're in the arena. It's like, entertain me.
Yeah, right? It's the same, it's like the same general sort of like disappointment in the fact that people are like, oh, the new Star Wars is just the first episode 4-1 over again. And it's like, oh, Jesus, I don't even want to talk to you right now.
Or people who are like, I don't watch shows anymore unless I can binge watch the whole season.
Because seriously. I can't keep in my mind for the week what happened last week. Like, what happened to us? 10 years? 10 years?
Yeah, it took me a while to finish Jessica Jones. I really enjoyed it, though. I didn't binge watch it over a weekend.
I'm still not done with Daredevil. People
yell at
me. I
haven't finished Daredevil, but I watched Jessica Jones because, you know, David Tennant.
Yeah.
Ooh, he was amazing, but let's not get onto that.
I know, there's a whole other podcast.
We'll have to do that one next.
All right. Well, The Man Who Fell to Earth, 1976, directed by, it was a French director, right? Oh, no, Nicholas Rogue. Written by Paul Mearsberg and Walter Travis, who also wrote the novel.
Thank you, Walter.
Starring David Bowie, Rip Torn, and Candy Clark. A classic in the lexicon of films, and definitely... Was this David Bowie's first movie? What was David Bowie?
I think so.
Before I claim that, before I let you guys go on a possible non-fact, let's confirm... oh my God. What the hell is this? I'm in the soundtrack section of his filmography.
Yeah, that goes on and
I
on
hate
forever.
IMDb sometimes.
He's done so many movies. He actually did voice work. I was saying this on SpongeBob. So I'm like, what?
Wow. He has street cred for everybody.
He does.
All right. So The Man Who Fell to Earth is actually his fifth movie.
What?
He was in a short called The Image. He was on, I guess he was also on a TV series in 68 called Theater 625. He was in an uncredited soldier in The Virgin Soldiers, and then he was in a TV short called Pierre in Turquoise.
This must be his first full length then.
This would be his first, and probably his first, like, big budget, like, Hollywood movie. So technically, I'm going to go back with, yes, his first movie. Sorry, the people who wrote that other shit he was in before this, but this is the one that counts, because this is the one where everyone's like, oh, cool, he can be in movies, too. So yeah, and just in the fact of, with his passing as of late, and I think everyone, that's one that I think everyone literally felt pain across the world with that news, and so this is part of our ongoing tribute to a masterful artist who left our planet way too soon. So thanks for checking us out. It's been a pleasure talking about this. I've been Dave the Clone.
Sean Fangirl S.
And I'm Interdimensional Dave. You can call me Dave.
And stay tuned to the Hollow 9 Network for more awesomeness like this to come. Thank you. You've been listening to the Hollow 9 Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, cast. Email us at Hollow9Podcast@gmail.com. Or find us at our home site, hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, fangirlzone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow 9.
I don't think I can do video, dude.
I look like total crap. Then I'm turning mine off. Shit. I was like splashing water on my face. I'm like, get me some fucking coffee, something.
I know. I'm like, I was just telling Dave, I get so early. I had to get up at like 8:15. I went to bed.
Why did you have to get up? Oh, for this?
Yes, our time difference, remember?
Yeah, but you needed a whole 45 minutes of prep time.
Did you want me to not sound like I have gravel in my throat? I think Dave has been, interdimensional Dave has been on an early podcast with me, and it sounded like I was gargling with gravel.
Is that what it's like?
Oh, that was so bad when I first wake up. I'm like, all right, let me try to wake up and then let the dog out so she's not here at the door like, I gotta pee.
That's funny.
So, Dave, how are things in New Jersey this morning?
Oh, there's. I looked out the window. I'm just like, fuck. I'm gonna have to deal with that really? Once we're done. But yeah, it's. I mean, it was kind of nice while it was happening, though. It was very quiet, you know.
Yeah, we got a lot of dry snow, so it was a piece of cake to clear. How about you? Was it wet?
I don't know, but it looks like, from what I can see from people shoveling and stuff out there, it doesn't look like it's wet. It looks like it's that really fluffy, you know.
Good.
So hopefully, and I did the thing where I put like a blanket over my car and then closed the doors around it so it wouldn't blow off. So I'm hoping I can just do that peel off the snow thing. That's like